First Name Sports starts now.
We're kind of on a first name basis around here.
On the Sports Map Radio Network.
Okay, let's get started.
From the Sports Map Radio Studios, here's Greg Frank.
All righty, we are back on a Thursday afternoon. It's First Name Sports for another hour. John Bellmer, our producer. As we roll on, we'll see how this shakes out, but news comes down yesterday, again, after we get off the air, that Chris Paul has been waived by the Phoenix Suns, and Shams Charania from Stadium, NBA insider, believes that this is the first step of Chris Paul returning to Phoenix for less money. And covers a gambling outlet put odds out. These are DraftKings Sportsbooks odds, but the covers Twitter put out the next team odds for Chris Paul. And Phoenix is a sizable minus 180 favorite. The Lakers are second choice at 7-1, and everybody's obviously longer odds from there all the way down. And so the question becomes, what does Chris Paul have left at this stage in his career, as we are very much into the last hurrah phase for Chris Paul at 38 years old, having just turned that a month ago? There's a guy who just averaged a career low in points per game at 13.9. His assists and steals numbers were down. Those are two of the other things that we forever associate with Chris Paul. So, I go back and forth here, because I think when a player enters the back nine, let's say, there's a level of kind of, okay, they're not what they once were, but they're still solid, that I think a lot of these guys have. Like, how many of them just, it's funny, we mentioned Dalvin Cook in the first hour, just fall off a cliff. Like, I don't think you see that as much with superstar NBA players. And I'm talking like the best of the best. LeBron's still a really good player right now. He just might not be an MVP candidate anymore. And I don't know, maybe Carmelo Anthony really drifted away pretty quickly. I still think, and you saw it with the Clippers, in the right environment, Russell Westbrook can help a team. And I guess we'll see on James Harden and how his value is on the open market this summer. Chris Paul's older than all these guys. But at the same time, if I told you you were going to get 13.9 points per game, 9 assists per game, 37.5 three-point field goal percentage from your point guard, and didn't attach a name to that player or an age, you'd probably say, okay, I'm going to need some more to work with here, but that's not bad. And I don't know. I feel like acknowledging the stage that these guys are in is important to note that they can still help teams, and it doesn't have to be, well, they're either a first-team All-NBA player or they don't belong in the NBA. And I think that's the interesting part of this Chris Paul discussion, as he enters his final days, and how he's valued, and if he wants to come back to Phoenix, does he look at it as, this is my best chance to win a championship? I will take the, you know, the pay cut to do so, and this is a team that I just recently was in the NBA Finals with. And I think there's also an intangible element that bodes well for Chris Paul, that whether it is the Phoenix Suns or another contender, he can help in terms of the locker room. And now, I know that he has not won an NBA championship, but, you know, this is a guy who was, I don't know if he still is, the president of the NBPA, the Players Association. So, a guy that's highly respected amongst the players and seems to be one of the good guys. So, does that allow you to kind of make room for a player like that? Because if he can still be a good player on the court, and he is a high character guy and a good locker room guy, then maybe this all works out, whether it be for the Suns or for anybody else that were to bring him in. Maybe he can still be a solid investment, let's say. And he's not just dead weight. You know, this isn't the Michael Jordan Wizards days, or, you know, I'll use the Wizards again. Remember when Paul Pierce played for the Wizards? You know, you had different examples of that across the NBA where guys were just kind of hanging on for dear life. I don't think Chris Paul's at that point yet. So, it'll be interesting to see what happens next in a very decorated career that is Chris Paul. And I think, again, a team that's ready-made, who maybe needs some playmaking in the backcourt, who maybe can add some good leadership. You add different, like, there's still some redeeming qualities here that Chris Paul brings to your team. Now, I don't think anybody expects him to be a big piece of a top-end, like a top-end talent of a contending team, meaning I don't think you want him to be one of your three best players. But, you know, let's again use the Phoenix Suns as an example. He was the third best player this year once they had Durant and Devin Booker there. And, you know, you might even argue DeAndre Ayton, despite the tension with the Suns, was better. Okay, whatever. But if Chris Paul is going back to the Suns on a lesser deal, and Ramona Shelbourne has reported that the Suns are considered a dark horse in the James Harden sweepstakes. So, I don't know. Is there a world in which, you know, a Harden-Paul sponsor, you know, a partnership in a backcourt? Now, Belmer brought it up. They didn't seem to like each other that much in Houston. And it certainly would be a smaller lineup if you're rolling out Paul, Harden, Booker, and then Durant at the four. But whether it's Harden or somebody else, is there enough of a pay cut that Chris Paul takes here to allow the Suns to bring in either another high-end guy or some ample depth, which really was a problem in the playoffs, to where the 2023-2024 Phoenix Suns are better than this year's Suns? And then Chris Paul says, you know what, I end up just staying where I'm at, but I have a better chance at winning an NBA championship than I did last year. Or is there another team out there that he feels is more equipped to win in the following season than Phoenix was this year? So, again, I use the phrase redeeming qualities, where if I'm Chris Paul and I'm a team interested, I'm trying to figure out how do those redeeming qualities that he does still provide fit into what I have. And, you know, it's funny, like his name has come up with the Sixers, and I'm a Sixers fan, but I worry about how long those redeeming qualities will last. Like, I'm not banging the drum for the Sixers to acquire Chris Paul. But At the same time, I do think that the Sixers are kind of the exact kind of team where you would look at and say, hey, they need some more leadership. They need, you know, somebody to light a fire under Joel Embiid to be able to play better in these big playoff games. And so from that standpoint, Chris Paul makes some sense. I wonder at the same time, these redeeming qualities I'm talking about, let's talk about on the court, not just the intangibles. Like I talked about, well, 13.9 points per game, 9 assists per game. Are you still getting that next season, or is it going to be down to 9 points per game and 6 assists per game? I mean, how quickly does he taper off now at 38? And, hey, that's why these executives have to make these decisions. Like, they have to gather information. And, you know, I certainly think Chris Paul is going to be playing in the NBA next season. And as I said to start the segment, the Suns are a sizable favorite just to bring him back on a cheaper deal. But it'll be interesting to see how the rest of the league values him, to where maybe Chris Paul says, hey, I can go somewhere else in a situation that I'm also still with a contender and make a little bit more money at the end of my career. So we'll see what happens there. Let's take a timeout and we'll come back. Game 3 of the Stanley Cup Final tonight in Sunrise, Florida, as the Panthers very much have their backs against the wall. They need to win this game if this Stanley Cup Final is going to amount to anything of consequence when it comes to a competitive and enjoyable and entertaining series. Can they do it? How do they do it? We'll discuss on the other side. Stanley Cup Final talk comes up next. It's First Name Sports on the Sports Map Radio Network.
This is First Name Sports on the Sports Map Radio Network. From the Sports Map Radio studios, here's Greg Frank.
All right, we are back here Thursday afternoon. Stanley Cup Final Game 3 this evening in Sunrise. I don't know why I like the name of the town, like Sunrise. I'd like to say that I'm from Sunrise. It just rolls off the tongue well. Not that far from Miami.
I kind of like Cherry Hill better.
Cherry, okay. And listen, no disrespect to my hometown. I should have qualified there by saying that, but I just like saying Sunrise. Anyway, and I'm a bit of a geography nerd when it comes to these things, so I always try and weave in the name of the town or where these teams are located in some way, shape, or form. But the Panthers are on their home ice tonight as they try and get into the Stanley Cup Final. You've yet to win a game, and you got to win 4 of them. And it's 2-0 Vegas right now in the Stanley Cup Final. And the term I used, I think, after Game 2 was gut check for the Panthers, because they haven't had one since they were down 3-1 to the Boston Bruins in the first round. Now, that's an experience that they can lean on, and they can say, well, all right. Boston's better than Vegas was this year. And we came back from 3-1 against them. They were very much in control of the conference semi-round against Toronto and the conference final round against Carolina. So they have to lean on that experience. And it's better to have that than to not have anything to lean on. And you know what? You get a couple days off. You get back in your own beds as the series shifts to Sunrise. Maybe some of that home cooking just wakes everybody up. Obviously, it's a Panthers team that has played a lot of games on the road in these playoffs as the lowest seed in the Eastern Conference, and they've had a lot of success on the road, hence why they're here. But can they flip the switch tonight? Because the last 4 periods of this series are just a Vegas onslaught. From the moment this series was 2-2 in game 1 entering the third, Vegas has outscored Florida 10-2. And So the question becomes, how do the Panthers find a way into this series? At least that's what I want to talk about here. Because, gosh, it's possible. We're sitting here on Thursday. You know, Vegas wins tonight, and tomorrow we're coming on almost prematurely coronating the Knights as the Stanley Cup champions. And maybe the cup is awarded on Saturday in the sweep. That would suck, because I'd like to just see more hockey, competitive series. It's what you always want in the championship rounds of these leagues. But they're not all like that. And Vegas right now looks like a team that's ready to go win the thing. So how does Florida do it? I think the start is pivotal. Get out and be the aggressors. Play with the lead. They've had the lead in this entire series for about 10 minutes, which was when Eric Staal scored shorthanded in game one to put Florida up 1-0. Jonathan Marchessault popped one in to tie the score before the end of the first period. And if you're Florida, it's how do we play with a lead? How do we change the game scripts a little bit? So jump out, get that first goal. It's very cliche, but I think being able to find a way into a hockey game and to dig in a little bit right from the opening faceoff and to really send a message to Vegas, hey, we're not going anywhere. Y'all might be up 2-0, but we're not going to lay down here. You might beat us. It may still be 4 or 5 games, but we're going to at least come out tonight with a purpose and play hard in front of our fans. Florida, I don't believe, has won a Stanley Cup Final game in its history. I think the only other time the Panthers went to the Stanley Cup Final was in 1996 when they were swept by the Colorado Avalanche. So I think for people that have followed the Florida Panthers for their entire existence, this would mean something to just win a game in the Stanley Cup Final. Yes, I am correct. The only other time that the Panthers went to the Stanley Cup Final was in 96 when they were swept. And I can tell you, when I saw my hockey team, I was lucky enough to see my team in 2010, 13 years ago, play in the Stanley Cup Final, Philadelphia Flyers, Chicago Blackhawks. And the Flyers won Game 3, and it was one of the coolest sporting events I've ever been at when you saw your team win a game in the Stanley Cup Final or win a game in the World Series or win a game in the NBA Finals. Just to be in that building is something you remember. And I'll always remember the experience that I had. And, you know, of course, at that time, I walked out thinking, all right, it can't be any closer than 2-1 after 3. We got ourselves into the series. And the Flyers ended up winning Game 4 in that series as well and turning it into a best of 3. So if you're the Panthers, just give your fans a little something to get excited about. Play for them as much as you play for yourselves. Because I can't imagine they thought, well, we're going to get this far and then lay down, right? I think that they at least want the illusion of hope, if it only is the illusion of hope. And how do you do that? You got to get them involved with a real good start tonight. Get that first goal. Allow Sergei Bobrovsky to settle in and for him to kind of relax and become himself again. Because, gosh, I know that everybody was bad for Florida in Game 2, and Bobrovsky ends up having to take that on the chin, and he's the one that gets pulled from the game. But they go as he goes. We know that. And Vegas is obviously getting far too many high-danger chances, far too much rubber Bobrovsky's way, and it's resulted in 2-0 series lead Golden Knights. Get a lead, get out early, drive play, play in Vegas's end more, and just make Bobrovsky's job a little bit easier. And again, this isn't to excuse the fact that he hasn't played well the first two games, but sooner or later, you're going to have to ask less of your goaltender. Why not tonight be the start of a shift with which you assign responsibility to how you win these games? And so I think the first period is really important for Florida tonight. And then I also think special teams. This is also something that you can bang, a nail into your head until you're dead. Like, it's cliche, but stay out of the box. Do not give Vegas power plays when Vegas is already showing to be the better team. And go get a power play goal or two to make your life a little bit easier. Because when you jump out and get a nice lead and you can score 5-on-4, well, then there's less of an onus to be the better team 5-on-5 if you're capitalizing on your power plays. So while I am not one to believe in scripted series and, you know, agendas being driven into these games, if Florida got some calls tonight, if there was some home cooking from the officials, it wouldn't shock me. But whether you're getting soft calls or if Vegas is maybe a little bit undisciplined tonight, you got to make them pay. And you got to pop in your power play opportunities. And, you know, for a team that has maybe struggled to score isn't the right word. I mean, yeah, sure, struggled to score. Because you look at the way they've won, it's been with defense and goaltending, and that's all fine and dandy. But can you, as I said earlier, assign the responsibility of how you win the game a little bit differently? And in doing so, that means you score more, which means you play with the lead more, which means your goaltender settles in more and regains some confidence. And that's the biggest thing tonight for Florida. Reestablish that confidence that I'm sure you had going into this series throughout the sweep of Carolina in the East Final, basically all of the Toronto series. It all started with the comeback against Boston, and now it feels like we're back to square one in terms of the Panthers having to dig themselves out of a hole that they haven't had to dig out of since that first round. Not sure if they can do it again, but as I open the segment with, there is something to lean on, at least, for the Florida Panthers in that they have that experience to take from, and maybe it can, you know, light a fire inside their locker room. Because right now, after what we've seen these two games, Vegas is far superior. This thing's over in 5 games max, and I wanted to at least try and drum up a game plan for Florida to how they win tonight and at least give us a game 4 on Saturday where we're all saying, hey, the Panthers are 1 win away from turning this into a best-of-3 and tying it up. At least give us that illusion. Because you lose tonight, then obviously you're down 3-0 and it's essentially over. Bill Lindsay, the Panthers color analyst, will join the radio broadcaster who is their color guy, will join on the other side. And so I wonder what his plan is for the Panthers. We'll ask him that and a whole lot more. First Name Sports for another 30 minutes on the Sports Map Radio Network.
This is First Name Sports on the Sports Map Radio Network. From the Sports Map Radio Studios, here's Greg Frank.
All right, we are back here on a Thursday afternoon. It's game 3 of the Stanley Cup Final this evening in Sunrise. And to talk more about it, we're going to bring on from the Panthers Radio Network color analyst Bill Lindsay joining us. Bill, thank you for your time. How are you?
Doing good, Greg. How are you doing?
Yeah, I'm doing pretty well myself. Looking forward to this game tonight and hoping, not because I'm a Panthers fan, but because I'd like to see a competitive Stanley Cup final. I'd like to see the Panthers find a way back into the series. How do they do it?
They got to use the energy constructively. Everyone talks about the layoff and would there be rust. It wasn't so much rust. It was over-exuberance trying to do too much that cost them in the first couple of games. They got caught running out of position trying to make that extra hit. So for me, it's just getting back to basics and doing your own job. And some of the player, Bobrovsky's going to have to be better. He's going to have to be better than Aiden Hill. Barkov's going to be more of a factor. The one area that I'm looking for improvement from is Vegas has got 3 goals from defensemen. They only had 3 goals all the playoffs coming into this series from their D-men. The Panthers have really been able to get a lot of contributions from their defensemen. Hasn't materialized in this series. They need to be up in the rush more, be that extra layer on the attack, pinching at the blue lines, keeping plays alive. And the Panthers also have to establish a forecheck. That's their identity. And getting in there, spending zone times, talking to Paul Maurice, he thought they were getting too cute in the offensive zone, trying to make an extra pass or two, not hanging on to the puck. They just like to get it back to the point. They were the best rebound team in the regular season. Get point shots through, crash the net, and just more of a simple game plan tonight and use your energy in a constructive way, much more constructive than you did the first couple of games.
Yeah, it feels like the big thing for me, too. You're at home. They've never won a Stanley Cup final game in franchise history. It should be a great crowd. Play with a lead, allow Bobrovsky to settle in a little bit more, and then that just changes the game script, right?
You have to. You like to get the lead, get the energy. You had a brief lead in game one. It was tied up in the March or so, but the rest of the series you've been chasing. And that's not really this group. The 11 of 12 games that they had won coming into the playoffs, 95% of those games have been played within one goal, either tied or ahead or a one-goal deficit. So you were always in the game. That has to be the Panthers' DNA. They want to keep this game close. You can't be – when Vegas has the lead, you force what the Panthers want to do. You force them to open up, and Vegas was able to exploit that. So it's really important this first period, the first 10 minutes, to come out and play clean. Stay out of the penalty box. Penalties have hurt this team. There's been bad penalties in the opening period. Last game, Lomberg, a punch in the head, Montour – flying elbow, that can't be done. So I'm just looking for this team to have a clean start in the opening period, play between the whistles, play hard, and just go after and put Vegas back on their heels. So far, Vegas has been able to dictate, and the Panthers have been reacting. Yeah. You want to be the team that's dictating stuff and have the other team reacting to you. That hasn't happened, and when the Panthers are at their best, that's what's happening. They're able to dictate the style and pace of play.
Absolutely. You know, I know that we talk about being back at home and maybe that can light a fire under the Panthers. So I don't want to ask this question. Don't assume that I'm just treating the series as over already. But I do want to go back and look at game one. How much are they going to regret that third period? Because it felt like Duclair gets the goal at the end of the second period. It's 2-2 and you're thinking win a period and we steal game one and we accomplish the goal of getting a split. How much do you think that third period in game one could really hurt them?
That could hurt them, but I go back and you won those 11 of 12 games coming into the series. And in that game, in the second period, Barkov hits a post, Montour hits a post, Aiden Hill makes one of the best saves in playoff history. all those bounces were kind of going your way. So it didn't go your way in that game. You lose in the third period. So there's adversity. You didn't get the bounces that you were getting earlier. Maybe you look back and you said it could have been 1-1, but you could have looked at some of the other series. You could ask Rod Brind'Amour in that series against the Panthers. He felt very clearly that instead of a four-game sweep, it could have been tied 2-2 at the very least. So you're going to have challenges. You're going to have stuff to overcome, but these Panthers have had their backs against the wall just to get into the playoffs. Yeah. They've been scratching and crawling. They were down 3-1 to Boston. They've been comfortable being uncomfortable for a long stretch, a long period. And Paul Maurice has just kept this team focused about the 6 inches in front of your nose. Be present. Just be present. It's happened. You can't look back and say, oh, what if, what could have been? It's 2-0. You're down. The only thing is, what do you do about it now? How do you handle it? How do you handle being on home ice? You win game three, the complexion of the series changes, but you have to come out and have your best performance.
Bill, I also wanted to go back to that Boston series because you brought it up, and I think that while that's 6-7 weeks in the rear view, at the same time, it's better to have that series and that comeback to lean on than to not have. And so, you know, how much can that help them here as they're up against a Vegas team that is firing on all cylinders?
It will help them. This team, there's a relaxed confidence about them, even though they're down a couple. They know they haven't played the best hockey, that it's in there, and they're going to have the chance here on home ice. And having a couple of days to kind of regroup is helpful, the way this series is spread out. You get a couple of days, you get back home, you can refocus, go over the video, do all that kind of stuff. And having that Boston series, you know that Vegas is good and they're playing their best hockey of the year, but the teams that you've gone through, Boston, Toronto, Carolina.
Yeah, exactly.
They all presented extreme challenges. I wouldn't say that you're going against a Vegas team that would be more problematic. They're playing awesome, but they're not more problematic than some of the teams that you faced. So you have a belief that if you just come out and do the things that you're supposed to do and play the right way, that you can get yourself back in this series.
Bill, what have your impressions been of Vegas? Obviously, Marchessault seems to always be in the right spot for the big goals, and Jack Eichel took that big hit from Tkachuk, but he's been playing really well. Aiden Hill, you brought him up, and how he stepped in these playoffs and filled in admirably. Just what have you seen from the Knights, particularly in this series?
Everything. Yeah. So what you talked about, the players you just mentioned? Yeah, so they're good players are playing good, but how deep does it go?
Yeah.
It's incredible. It's Howden, it's Carrier, it's Kolesar, it's their defenseman. They had three goals from defensemen coming in. They get three goals already in this Stanley Cup Finals from defensemen. They get contributions from their first line. They get contributions from their fourth line. That's what's really impressed me the most about Vegas. Jack Eichel doesn't have a goal. William Karlsson doesn't have a goal. Chandler Stephenson, I don't believe, has a goal. Those are your superstars. They've had impacts on the series, but they've been, as far as the goal totals, Bruce Cassidy and his team, I give them credit, because they come out and they roll four lines, and it's going to be 1, 2, 3, 4, and they have full trust and belief in all four lines, six defensemen and a goaltender. When you get a group rolling like that, it's hard to overcome, but the Panthers are going to have the same mentality. They're going to have 18 players pulling on the rope in the same direction.
Bill, I guess it's easy to say Matthew Tkachuk, but what are some of the other obvious differences from this year's Panthers team as opposed to previous Panthers teams who were better in the regular season but not as good in the playoffs?
Well, you just want to go back to last year when they won the President's Trophy. There was high glitz, high glamour. Flash and dash, rush, scoring chances. Paul Maurice wanted to change the system. Bill Zito, that's the hire, and that's what he wanted to do. He changed his team from a team that exploited teams off the rush to how he felt you had to win in the playoffs, and that was with a heavy forechecking model and being really strong through the middle of the ice, creating turnovers and keeping pucks alive in their own zone. It didn't materialize until his team got healthy that Paul Maurice and their systems came intact, but you could see at the last 25 games, okay, that's what they're looking for. I can see this team. I can see what they're trying to do. Now, was it enough to get in the playoffs? Just barely. But once it took hold and those systems were in place, it was a much different look than we had last year when we won the President's Trophy. It was a lot grittier. It was a lot more determined. It was a lot feistier. And Matthew Tkachuk led the way in that regard. But they went from that rush team to a team that dumps the puck out, dumps it in, and kind of feasts off turnovers. So that's what it is. If you see that from this Panther team tonight, where they're dumping it out, dumping it in, spending time in the Vegas end, then you'll know that they're on their game.
There he is, Bill Lindsay, color analyst for the Florida Panthers Radio Network, kind enough to join us in advance of Game 3 of the Stanley Cup Final tonight in Sunrise. Bill, thank you for your time. Enjoy the game tonight.
All right, thank you very much. Have a great day.
All right, we will take one final timeout. How about the debut of Ellie De La Cruz? We'll touch on that as the Reds phenom prospect hits the big stage, or the show, I should say, with some very impressive happenings the last couple days. We'll get to it. First Name Sports, Sports Map Radio.
This is First Name Sports on the Sports Map Radio Network. From the Sports Map Radio studios, here's Greg Frank.
All right, we're back here on a Thursday afternoon as we get out of Dodge here. Wrapping things up, First Name Sports, Sports Map Radio. And I wanted to acknowledge the hot start of one Ellie De La Cruz. We talked about this on, I believe it was Tuesday, when he was promoted to the big leagues by the Cincinnati Reds. And I talked about how if you're particularly a team like the Reds, who obviously, for the last decade, really, having given their fans a ton to cheer about. How this stuff can be exciting. Even if the prospect doesn't quite hit his ceiling, or maybe this is just a flash in the pan and he's never quite the all-star type player you're hoping you have when he's in the system, ranked as a high-rated prospect. The initial wow factor that can be provided by a hyped prospect coming up. Like, I go back to Dominic Brown with the Phillies. When I was in high school, this guy was highly touted, and he came up and had this one crazy month of June when I was a senior in high school, and we were down the shore after our prom, and we had to make sure we got near a TV to watch his at-bats. He usually would hit a home run. Something crazy would happen. He didn't amount to anything, but you had a shock for, you know, a wow factor there for a little bit that was kind of cool. And Ellie De La Cruz, as the Reds did lose today, 6-0 final score in Southwest Ohio as the Dodgers win at Great American Ballpark. But Cincinnati wins or loses 6-0. De La Cruz did have a hit today. But prior to today's game, his first five at-bats of his major league career, Ellie De La Cruz had registered the Reds' two hardest hit balls of the season by exit velocity, 114.8 and 112 off the bat. And the Reds' two fastest sprint speeds of 2023 were also registered by De La Cruz, reaching speeds of 30.9 and 30.4 miles per hour. He had the longest home run for the Reds at 458 feet. And he had the fastest time in the major leagues from home to third of just 10.83 seconds on a triple. That's crazy that he's doing all of that. And again, this was a guy that was built up to be a big power speed guy, right? And what did I just reel off there? A lot of power numbers, a lot of speed numbers. And I love these kinds of players that are just all over the baseball field. And they can seemingly do everything. And the toolsy guys that can hit for power, that can just raw hit for gap power and, you know, singles and doubles, steal bases, hit the ball over the wall, and flirt with 30-30 type of seasons. Like, those are the most exciting players to me in the game, and that's why I think Ronald Acuna Jr. is the best player in baseball right now. And I talked a little bit about it earlier in the week. Ronald Acuna Jr. and Spencer Strider trying to become the fifth duo in the history of the sport to win the MVP and the Cy Young Award in the same season. Joining the likes of Albert Pujols and Chris Carpenter, Justin Morneau and Johan Santana, Miguel Tejada and Barry Zito, and Miguel Cabrera and Max Scherzer. It's some good company, and I think that the Braves duo has a real good chance of doing that. But Acuna is just such a fun player to watch, and Ellie De La Cruz so far has been that for the Reds. It's a franchise that has desperately needed something to give its fan base a reason to be excited. With all that said, I did also, it's never too early. I think these next 6 to 8 weeks, we're really going to be, particularly when we get into July, we're going to be ramping up the trade speculation surrounding some guys. And I did stumble across, to kind of complete the baseball segment for today, some trade deadline candidates as Major League Baseball. Mark Feinsand on MLB.com wrote a good story just encapsulating some top candidates, guys that profile pretty well. You're looking for guys in their late 20s, early 30s on, you know, expiring contracts, or maybe they have a year of club control left. That's usually what you see get moved at the trade deadline. And so the first candidate that is mentioned is the third baseman for the Washington Nationals, Jaimer Candelario, who is 29 years old on a one-year, $5 million contract, slashing .329, .444, .610 in his last 23 games, and is clearly the type of rental bat that could help. And the Nationals, while they have not been maybe as bad as some people thought, are still at the bottom of the NL East and figure to be a seller. So Jaime Candelario, a name to watch over these next 5-6 weeks. How about Michael Conforto? This is a guy that, talking about prospects, came through the Mets system, first-round draft pick out of Oregon State University, and you know, never quite hit the ceiling as the best player on the Mets, or if people thought he could be that, but has obviously still been a pretty nice bat at you know, various junctures of his career. He's in the first year of a 2-year deal, $36 million that he signed with the San Francisco Giants, but he can opt out at the end of the year provided he hits 350 plate appearances. So I think Jaime Candelario is definitely one that we look at, he's for sure one, but also the outfielder for San Francisco, Michael Conforto, figures to be one that will be highly sought after if the Giants decide to sell, which is far from certain as well. Here's another name, Edwin Diaz's younger brother, Alexis Diaz. We just talked about the Reds. 0.82 earned run average over his last 10 outings entering Wednesday. And how about 20 strikeouts in 11 innings while getting 7 saves as well? And a guy that has 4 more seasons of club control, under club control through 2027. So if the Reds, those are always the interesting ones at the deadline. If the Reds decide, hey, it's time for us to, you know, we can dangle a guy that is very sought after because you're getting him for 4 more years after this year, then it could bring back a nice prospect package for the Reds as they continue to add to their core of young talent that figures to be headlined by Ellie De La Cruz in the near future. And lastly, basically everyone on the Chicago White Sox. I mean, at this point, it's not just a Tony La Russa thing. I was having this conversation with a friend of mine that's into baseball, and he was saying that while that's, you know, the Tony La Russa thing was a problem last year, when you look at the White Sox and Lance Lynn and, you know, Michael Kovac's actually been okay lately. Relievers, Kendall Graveman could be available. And there was one other guy, Kenyon Middleton. For whatever reason, this group has torpedoed the last couple of years, and La Russa's not there anymore. So this was a team that was in the division series, lost in 4 games to the Houston Astros in 2021. And now just 2 years later, we're saying, like, what is going on the south side of Chicago? So I think they have some bigger problems that they need to look at. And the White Sox are going to very much be a seller at this year's trade deadline. Maybe it's a quick fix type of sell, or maybe they are, you know, fire sailing. But if they can't even compete in the AL Central, which is one of the worst divisions in baseball, and that's the other thing. If you're in the American League and there's any doubt as to if you are, you know, what you have, then you should be selling, because the American League is the deeper of the two leagues in baseball. That's where you have Houston and Texas even still without DeGrom, and obviously the whole AL East, Tampa, Yankees, Toronto, Baltimore, all very good. And, you know, Seattle, if they can keep, you know, get it together a little bit more in the AL West. If you're not one of those 7 or 8 teams, you don't have a chance, and you should be selling. And the White Sox certainly fit that bill. So keep an eye on some of those White Sox players over the next 6-7 weeks. Always like to check in on the trade deadline landscape in Major League Baseball, even though, again, we are still a ways away from anything of consequence happening on that front. Just some names there to keep an eye on as we wrap things up for a Thursday afternoon. I'd like to see the Florida Panthers win tonight. I'd like to see the Stanley Cup Final at least provide the illusion of competition, even if perhaps tonight is the only win for Florida, and then Vegas wins Saturday night, and we're back here Monday talking about 3-1 and a coronation of the Vegas Golden Knights, which would make them the fastest Stanley Cup champion as an expansion franchise. This is the 6th season for the Vegas Golden Knights, so we'll see if they can finish the job, as they have 2 of the necessary 4 wins in the Stanley Cup Final. Game 3 tonight in Sunrise. We'll certainly recap it tomorrow and preview Game 4 of the NBA Finals, as it'll be a fun Friday show. We'll do our 10th inning and Friday 5 benchmarks as well. Aren't all Fridays fun? Looking forward to it. He's John Bellmer. Thanks to him for producing, as always. Thanks to our 2 guests. My name is Greg Frank. Signing off. Sports Kings up on the other side. Everybody enjoy the rest of your Thursdays. This has been First Name Sports on the Sports Map Radio Network.